The Guardian.
Euro 2012 Football Daily with James Richardson from The Guardian.
Euro 2012 Day 10, Group B is abuzz. Germany and Portugal sail through, Dutch and Danes do one. The pod takes stock, dials up some continental chums, and then asks the big questions about Monday's action. Group C, Italy, Ireland, Croatia, Spain. There's fear of the biscotto in the land of Garibaldi, but will it be a cracker in this wafer tournament? The questions that matter asked in today's Football Daily. Yes, it's Football Daily live from the Euros, and what an incredible tournament this is. Is it even better today than it was yesterday, Jacob?
I think probably the best tournament since Euro 2000.
I think it's even better than that one.
Do you?
I do.
That was a good tournament.
It was, but you look back at some of the highlights of that. And by the way, hello, Bandini.
Hi, don't let us intrude on you and Jacob's multi-night.
Yeah. Three nights in a row.
Yeah,
nights stand.
Yeah, we've got cabin fever.
Yeah, we certainly have. Tell you what else we've got. Debuting on the pod today, Ian McCourt. Jaunty McCourt, as he's known around The Guardian. Why, Ian, why?
I'm not quite sure, actually.
Come off it.
I think most of the people around the Guardian office have a serious bout of depression. And so anybody who comes in with an ounce of a smile gets the jaunty label.
Right. And, of course, your beret at a raffish angle.
Yeah.
That's the other thing. Right, okay. Well, it's good that you're here because you were watching the Germany-Denmark game.
Unfortunately.
Ah.
Kind of just waking up from a comatose.
Was it not very good?
No, not particularly good. Germany kind of started the tournament quite slowly against the Portuguese. They didn't really press and pass as well as we know they can. And they really put the Dutch down in the second match, but they were back to their kind of first game form this time against the Danes. They started well, and Podolski got a nice goal, but they let the Danes back in with some pretty amateur defending.
And then there was that moment when Portugal scored and went 2-1 up against Netherlands, and Germany were just one goal away from going out of the tournament.
Yeah, and it was around that time that Niklas Bentner should have had a penalty. He got dragged down in the box by Badstuber, and the referee kind of looked the other way and didn't give anything. And then after that, they had a really nice counter-attack where Ozil just kind of sprayed the ball across the box and Bender finished it off, and
Lars
after that,
Bender,
it was all over.
A lot of people commenting about his goal on Twitter. Here's my favourite one from David Thompson, a.k.a. Oink Bar Moo. He says, Beckham it like Bender. Classy stuff. All right, well, Germany goes through as the group winners, and they'll be, of course, facing Greece. We did all that yesterday, though, so let's move on to the other game, which, of course, saw Portugal take on Holland and beat them. What happened there?
For me, probably the most enjoyable game of the tournament so far.
Really?
Yes, really. I was doing the minute by minute, and there was a period for about 20 minutes in the first half where it was just not a chance a minute. There were about two chances in a minute. It just went back and forth. And obviously, Bert van Marwijk, he changed it up. He brought in Klaas-Jan Huntelaar for Afellay, and he took out Van Bommel in midfield and brought in Van der Vaart, who scored a brilliant goal after about 10 or 15 minutes.
Basically, he did what the entire world was telling him to do. How did it work out for him?
It didn't actually work out that well after Van der Vaart's goal. Basically, they had four or five attackers, as many guys wanted to go forward, and absolutely no one in midfield to stop to stop Ronaldo and co. It was basically De Jong against the entire Portuguese attack, and then a pretty poor Holland defence. If you look at when Ronaldo struggled for Portugal, it's been because teams have basically marked him out of the game. They put as many men as possible on him. Holland just gave him the freedom of the pitch, and he was absolutely outstanding. Hmm. Probably the best individual performance of the tournament so far. It was just brilliant, especially in the first half when he could have scored at four or five. He scored a good goal. He hit the post. He had a really good header saved. Another shot from about 40 yards out saved. Absolutely superb.
Everyone's got their fingers in the air here. We all want to talk about it.
I don't want to be excessively negative. Obviously, it was very important two goals for him in his scoring record before this. Obviously, I think it was six goals in 16 tournament games before this. So it's important for him to be doing it. But a little part of me was looking at this game and thinking, well, Holland are defending so badly and he's had so many chances. Actually, shouldn't we be looking at more than two goals, and shouldn't this game have been,
out
of sight much sooner?
Well, we came into this game with you counting up the number of shots he'd had for Portugal in international tournaments.
against the number of goals he'd had. What was his strike rate like?
It was 98 shots with 5 goals since 2004.
Right.
And he had 3 shots before he scored tonight. So it was 100, he had 101 shots, and then he was put through really well by the right-back, João Pereira, who scored his 6th goal.
In this tournament, then, he'd had, without scoring, how many before he actually put one in the net?
Quite a lot, Lampard-esque levels.
How many did he have in this game? Was it 11 or something? Something like a record?
I mean, in the first half, as I say, he could have scored 5 or 6.
Right.
It was just, and later on, when he scored his 2nd goal after a brilliant counter-attack, he then hit the post with another brilliant shot from outside the area. This was probably the most foolish approach I've ever seen any team take against Ronaldo, just giving him absolutely loads of space. If they play a better team, a more more defensively sound team, they won't be given that much space, I think.
Well, one of the many questions that could be asked about Holland's approach, not just in this game, but in the tournament as a whole. You'll recall Leander Scherlakens casting one or two doubts about how far he thought they were going to go in Euro 2012. I doubt if even he could have predicted it would have been this bad. But he joins us now on the line. Leander, hello.
Hello, James.
Hi, Leander. Sorry about that.
Well, you're very, very sweet to remind the listeners that I had predicted this. I take no joy in this whatsoever, of course, but you really wondered all along, a team as bad defensively as this one, with playing an 18-year-old as a left back, the rest of the line already not used to covering itself in glory, what the chances were.
Mm. Well, Van Marwijk did what everyone told him to. He put in Huntelaar and Van der Vaart. And Huntelaar, did he touch the ball today?
I wondered that myself. I don't think he touched it more than once or twice. I recall him skying it, or in a meaningful way, he's not touched it more than once or twice.
I can actually interject on that. After about 80 minutes, he still hadn't had a shot, and his pass completion rate was south of 60%. He had a shot, I think, in about the 85th or 86th minute, which was his first meaningful contribution.
Oh.
Yeah, that's the one.
Well, there you go, but... You weren't full of optimism, but surely you weren't expecting it to be this bad.
No, this was just dire. I mean, we all know traditionally this Dutch team is capable, whatever incarnation, as any country in the world, to self-implode. Maybe it's a little bit the nature of the Dutch player. I mean, he's always been sort of an arrogant know-it-all type, going all the way back to Cruyff, of course, but most teams have backed it up, and most teams have had sufficient talent to overcome that. Soccer is a bit of a public discourse in Holland. It teams like to argue. This was famously much to the disgust of Bobby Robson when he coached at PSV. And this team seemed to just be in terribly bad form. Wesley Sneijder was actually pretty good, but Robin van Persie was a shadow of his usual self. Several players weren't in good form. And then on top of that, the defense collapses the way it did. The defense was always going to be the liability, but if the rest of the team plays up to its level, they can somewhat compensate for that.
All right,
but they didn't, and so they didn't.
Leander, Paolo's got an amazing stat about Holland's goals. The Ireland one.
It's not an amazing stat.
It is actually an amazing stat.
It was mentioned by Clive Tilsley on the ITV commentary, but Holland now got only one more goal than Ireland in this tournament, and Ireland still have a game left to play. I thought that was remarkable when you look at a team that's got Robin van Persie, Arjen Robben, Wesley Sneijder, Van der Vaart, Klaas-Jan Huntelaar, only one more goal than Ireland.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing. But you have to recall in 2010, you had Wesley Sneijder, who it was never in his career a guy who just put the goals in by the bushel. He scored quite a few for Ajax, but that was at the point right before he left for Real Madrid when he was just dominating the Dutch league. But at the World Cup, he suddenly came up with 5, a few of them lucky ones. Guys like Giovanni van Bronckhorst started scoring goals. They got help in the scoring department from a lot of different places, whereas van Persie didn't have the best tournament in 2010 either. But if that stops, if your strikers are out of form and they don't get help from anybody else, you're always going to be in big trouble.
Yeah, absolutely. The men offside says, Jimbo, question for the pod. Can Holland's bad performances be put down to a lack of club connections? Every player from the starting 11 is at a different club.
That's a really interesting question. I suspect it might have something to do with that. I mean, it's pretty well worn by now that the teams that have their core all play for the same clubs or for just several clubs tend to be better off. That is an issue with this team, I think, although they've been playing together for quite a long time. But what struck me more than anything in this tournament is that the defense would be so bad that the two holding midfielders Van Marwijk insists on playing with, even though it's very un-Dutch, tend to have to track back so far to help out, that there's really nothing connecting the four-man unit at the top and the six-man defense. You just have this no-man's land in the middle, and then what you see today is guys like Van der Vaart, who should be occupying themselves with giving the last pass and taking long shots and the like, are having to track all the way back to pick up the ball and try to connect the dots around them. So in that sense, the team was terribly, terribly disjointed throughout the tournament.
Mind you, they were in a particularly tough group. What will be the kind of call now from the Dutch media, the Dutch public? What do they think should happen next?
I imagine Van Marwijk is done. I mean, like I said last time, I don't really know what the reaction is going to be to this because it's been so terribly unexpected. It's not really been planned for. And you do wonder what happens to this generation because Van Persie, at the club level anyway, is at the absolute peak of his career. Sneijder, maybe we've already seen the best of him. And a guy like Robin, as brittle as he is, you don't know how many years he has left in him. So you think for this generation, and Nigel de Jong espoused this as well before the tournament where he said, you know, the World Cup in 2014 is going to be really, really hard for a non-South American country to win. So you wonder for this generation how much is left in the tank, how many more chances they're going to get. And I'd expect certainly that Bert van Marwijk is in very serious danger of losing his job as well, even though he has a contract through 2016.
All right then, Leander. Well, there you go. Many commiserations. Better luck next time. And thanks for all your input here on Football Daily.
Thank you. It ended far too soon.
Euro 2012 Football Daily with AC Jimbo.
Well, having commiserated with Leander, let's now congratulate our own top Portuguese CNN anchorman, Pedro Pinto. Pedro, are you there?
I'm in a lift at the moment, so if you can give me 30 seconds.
Yeah. Are you going up or down?
I'm going down, just like the Dutch.
Right. Pedro?
Okay, I'm out.
Okay, great.
I'm out.
You're out? We heard you were under a table during the game.
You saw a picture on Twitter after Nani missed a shitter. Yes, I was nearly crawling under the table at that point. I can confirm that.
Right, okay. It was a very tense evening. It started badly, of course, for Portugal.
It did. And to be honest, before the game, I thought either Cristiano has a Real Madrid-like game or we're going out. And when Rafael van der Vaart scored that opener, I did fear for the worst. I'm not going to lie to you. But what I was really impressed by today was that I saw a lot of personality, a lot of confidence, and a lot of brave players out there. Because if you're Portuguese, you're used to seeing talent, but what's missing is the kind of team spirit, which is what we saw today. And they were first to nearly every ball. As a Portuguese national, forgetting the impartial journalist part for this second, I'm very proud.
Excellent news. You mentioned Ronaldo there. We were a little bit down on him the other day here in the pod. But Jacob Steinberg, was calling his performance today the best he's seen in Euro 2012. Would you agree?
I would agree. I think it's his best performance in a Portugal shirt. I was confident that he would come through. I had him as captain of my fantasy team, can tell you that much. But I was really proud of him. He's taken a lot of flack over the last few days in Portugal. Journalists, fans, everybody criticizing him. And you had to look at the numbers, and in major tournaments, he had only 5 goals in 21 appearances for Portugal. And you compare that with his numbers at Real Madrid, and you see a huge discrepancy there. But he did silence the critics, and I agree it was probably the best individual performance of the tournament so far.
All right. It was a game very much of two haircuts as well, or two hairstyles for Ronaldo. Did you notice that?
Which hairstyle?
Well, he started off
like
with
the
kind of
head of the Dutch.
No. He started off with it all kind of crested up.
Haircuts of the Portuguese? Sorry, yeah, you tell me.
Yeah, in half time, he basically restyled. In the first half, he went for a kind of Rocky Tussled, quite heavily gelled affair. And then in the second half, he came out with it all basically slicked back in a kind of a Valentino-esque, again, very heavily gelled. Is that common for him?
I can't believe we're discussing how much gel Cristiano has in his hair.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you, as a Southern European, we don't leave home without it.
Right.
Or at least we don't leave home without having some in our back pocket just for an emergency. Our hair is a very important detail, and for Cristiano being a world superstar, I can tell you he does spend quite a few minutes in front of the mirror every day making sure that, every little strand is in its perfect place.
Right, okay. I mean, I've no idea what you're talking about, but terrific. Well, you're filled with confidence now, and you're proud of the team. You've got the Czech Republic next, which it's a bad idea to make too many assumptions about teams in this tournament in particular, but that's not a bad draw, is it?
I, you would take the Czech Republic in the quarterfinals of the Euro any tournament, wouldn't you? The only thing I can tell you is that when I think of the Czech Republic, I think of Karol Poborský and an amazing goal he scored against Portugal. I think it was Euro 96 that knocked us out. Of course, they don't have the kind of talent that they had back then. Patrick Bergers, and especially in midfield, they had a lot of talented players. I think they're not the same team. But then again, did we expect them to make it past the group? I don't think that many of us did. I think in this kind of tournament, if Portugal haven't learned, or any team hasn't learned, that they can't underestimate an opponent, then they haven't done their homework. Definitely favorites. I would say 70-30% favorites, Portugal. But we've got to beat them on the pitch.
All right. Well, enjoy the game, Pedro, and keep a table handy. And I look forward to speaking to you again soon.
Look forward to it.
Thanks, Pedro. CNN's Pedro Pinto. So there you go. Czech Republic taking on Portugal while Greece take on Germany, as predicted here on this pod, amazingly enough. Paolo.
Yeah, I just thought it was interesting. It's not so much specifically Group B, but just because we had another two games that fit the bill tonight, we've now had 20 matches in Euro 2012 and not a single 0-0 draw.
Wow. Good. Oh, I tell you what, Monday looks very exciting. Or does it? Or does it? Because you've got Spain against Croatia. That's a big game. Spain on 4 points. Croatia also on 4 points. So that one's for group winners. But then you've also got Italy, who are on 2 points, taking on Ireland. And the big fear, you all know this by now, I don't need to explain this, is that just as in 2004, having drawn their first two games, Italy could win but still go out if the other two team come to a mutually acceptable scoreline of, say, 2-2, 3-3, etc. The biscotto, Paolo.
Yeah, and Gigi Buffon was basically having a massive go he made a post on Facebook, which was having a big go at the press, saying that the only people who worry about this are incompetent people and mediocre people. This is, you know, not what winners care about, this sort of thing, and let's not even talk about it. But I thought it was sort of salient because Buffon, of course, on the eve of this tournament, when all the match-fixing furore was kicking off, he had a few loose words with the press, and he came out with this phrase talking about the sort of, not fixed, but the sort of the
arrangements.
Yeah, the arrangements that seem to come to at the end of seasons, where teams get draws that suit both sides. And he came up with this phrase: "Better two wounded than one dead." Mm. Which, of course, the press
metaphorical. Can I stress
it? Yes, but of course, the press ran with and was a big thing. And there was lots of people, you know, basically pointing out that was rather ill-advised at the timing of such a comment. But it's sort of come round to bite him a little bit now, because Croatia and Spain could be the two wounded and Italy could be the dead.
Right. Not sure that works with the metaphor. But
no,
anyway,
really.
Yeah. let's talk about the game that Italy have got. We'll come on to Spain-Croatia in a second. Italy, big tactical changes for Prandelli. Balotelli's got a bit of a knock on the knee.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what the truth is and isn't, because Prandelli today sort of said, oh, I don't see it in quite as firm terms as you journalists do, but it sounds like basically he's going to abandon the 3-5-2 and go back to the 4-3-1-2 that they used all through qualifying, which is a fairly significant change. Obviously, the three-man defence was something they only went to right on the eve of the tournament. They'd never practised it. It was something that they decided to do in training. And to be honest with you, against Spain, it seemed like it worked very well. First half against Croatia seemed to work very well. It feels a little bit knee-jerk now to suddenly be going, well, this is the problem. This is going to fix everything. I'm not certain that the 3-5-2 needed to be changed. The one thing I would say is you've got two fullbacks, Maggio and Giaccherini, playing in that system, who have been absolutely killing themselves in both those games, getting up and down the pitch. You've got no one else in the 3-5-2 who can fill those roles anywhere near as well. And I think that's got to be part of the thinking, is even if you're going to go back to it later in the tournament, you need to be able to give those guys a break at some point.
Well, the other advantage is it lets De Rossi come a little bit further up, and maybe that's part of the thinking, Ian.
Yeah, I'm quite amused by the fact that Italy are worrying about tactics ahead of playing Ireland.
Well, Italy don't have a good record against Ireland, as you probably know.
Well, Ireland have only beaten them in one competitive match, haven't they?
Yeah,
and the rest have all been friendlies.
Since Trapattoni took the job, Italy have played Ireland three times and Italy haven't won any of them. Hmm. They did win the friendly last year. I think that's a bit of a dubious one in that Italy had some very strange players. Well, not strange players, but players who certainly aren't in the squad now in their lineup. They had Viviano in goal. They had Cassani playing at fullback. They had
they still had Pirlo and Rossi in the side, though, didn't they?
They did. But they had Pazzini up front, who's having one of the worst seasons he's had in his entire career. So there's a lot of players in that lineup who aren't in the squad now. But I do think there's perhaps a psychological thing going on as well there, in that Trapattoni was Prandelli's boss at Juventus for several years. They had six seasons together at Juventus and won three titles. And his press conference today, Prandelli was saying, "Oh, to me, he's still the boss. He's still the mister." And I thought that maybe there's a little bit of a psychological thing going on there as well, where it's kind of hard to be up against this guy who you've respected and seen as your boss the whole time. I don't know.
You think so still? With Trapattoni's record in the years since. I tell you what, it's exactly 18 years ago on Monday that Ireland beat Italy in that opening game of the 94 World Cup.
Ooh. We had some good league-winning players back then, yeah. Instead of other championship players. And
right.
We've no player in any of the top four teams in England.
Do you know, there's only one side at Euro 2012 who are yet to win a match this calendar year. Do you know who that is, Ian?
Is it Italy?
It is Italy.
Yeah. Well, you mean
and you scored two goals, haven't they?
In the calendar year?
Yeah.
Yeah, but they haven't conceded many either.
If you want to talk about major tournaments as well, I mean, it's now six games without a win at major tournaments. Talking about France's record of eight games before they won the other day. So look, there are things against Italy here. I think obviously Ireland were very poor against Spain and they weren't impressive against Croatia. So on paper, I think Italy have played easily well enough in the first game and in that first half football against Croatia to assume that they should win this game comfortably. However, you know, these things don't always go as expected.
How excited are you by West Ham legend Alessandro Diamanti playing?
There's been a whiff of this in the papers today that Diamanti could get into the team. Apparently, he's been doing very well in training.
He's had a great season for Bologna.
He has had a great season for Bologna, but I don't think that's going to be what they start with. I wouldn't rule out seeing him at some point in the game. But we did touch on it. You mentioned it earlier, and we haven't really properly said it, which is that Di Natale will start up front almost certainly because Mario Balotelli has picked up a knee injury. And it's interesting because now we don't know whether or not he would have done this anyway because it had been mooted. But on Friday, Prandelli said, no, Balotelli's going to start again. But he also said, I'm not changing the formation, I'm not changing anything. And that looks like it wasn't true either. So who knows? But either way, Di Natale should be starting against Ireland.
Oh, I think it's quite an interesting lineup. This is back to the qualifying setup with the two midfielders and then three in front of them. So you've got De Rossi alongside Pirlo, is that right? Mm-hmm. And then you've got Diamanti and then...
Well, you'd have De Rossi, I imagine De Rossi, Pirlo and Marchisio. And then at the moment you're talking about Diamanti is not going to start. I mean, that's a left field choice. I think he might come off the bench, but Motta is expected to start at trequartista. Right. And Thiago Motta, is he a trequartista? Well, not really, but we'll see how it works out.
Ian, how fired up do you think Ireland's going to be after all the stuff with Roy Keane? Do you think they've got no points? Are they going to just be turning up for the sing song, or are they going to try and salvage some pride?
Yeah, it's difficult to say. I think they will try their best, as Irish teams generally tend to do. But I don't really think that's going to be... I really don't think that's going to be enough. I think Italy... I saw the Croatia game, and they're technically too superior for Ireland.
Ireland should be able to basically defend here fairly well. Italy do have a real problem. You mentioned this, scoring goals. And they do get very frustrated as well when they fail to break down a side. If Ireland don't do this thing that they've been doing of letting in an early goal, if they just basically sit tight, I think this game could end up getting very, very nervous for Italy indeed.
Well, I think, again, you can draw the interesting parallel with 2004 and the biscotto with Denmark and Sweden. But Italy started to beat Bulgaria in that group, and they left it right until the very last second, as I recall, and Cassano actually with the goal. But it was touch and go that they were going to win their game. And as I think I remember, Cassano came charging over to the bench to celebrate, only to find out that things were going...
Burst into tears.
Find out things were going well. But the problem up front is legitimate. When you look at that squad, Di Natale is the top scorer in that squad, and he has 11 goals for Italy. So that's all-time top scorer for Italy in that squad. So it's not a squad blessed with proven international goal scorers.
I think it could be quite a nervous evening for the Italians. Meantime, of course, part of that will be down to the news coming from the Spain-Croatia game. Both sides insist they're going to be going absolutely all out for the win. And, of course, why wouldn't they? They both want to finish top of the group. But it's interesting that bookmakers are offering very short odds indeed on a 2-2 draw, 4-1, whereas you could get, say, 16-1 on the same scoreline between France and Sweden the next day. Interesting, no?
Yeah, I can't really see it being a 2-2 draw. I can't remember.
Bookies can.
I can't really remember the last time Spain conceded more than one goal in a match, or, well, at least in an international tournament. It must be going back to the 2006 World Cup, maybe, when they lost to France in the second round. They got knocked out. They lost 3-1. But generally, they just have too much of the ball for anyone most of the time to score against them. So to score two, it's a very tall order.
It could be quite interesting to see how Jelovic and Mandzukic do against the Spanish defence, because the Spanish defence haven't really been tested. They certainly went against Ireland anyway.
I think there's some form of injury doubt hanging over Mandzukic. Interesting question. The Croats looked great in that second half against Italy when they... was the tactical switch there?
They moved Modric further up. Yeah.
So that they're certainly a force coming into this game. It's worth remembering as well, Bilic in his press conference today was making a point about what a proud nation they are. And if you go back to, say, when England failed to make it to the 2008 European Championships, it's because a Croatia team that was already qualified and had nothing to play for still beat them at Wembley.
Well, this was the thought I had, is, you know, even in the sort of theoretical notional scenario where you think, oh, Spain might, because Spain do have supposedly big issues with Italy and have, you know, never beaten them over 90 minutes in the competition. If they really want to get Italy out, fine. But then you think about it and think, all right, if you're Spain and you're playing out this game and, okay, it's 2-2 with 2 minutes to go, what if Croatia suddenly get in their heads, actually, we could knock out the world champions? It just seems like, why would you put yourself in that position if you're Spain? You know you're only going to face Italy in the final anyway, which isn't that likely. I don't know. It seems like it would
even
be a bizarre
thing
to do.
The one in 2004, I mean, that wasn't the equaliser in the last minute.
Yeah, so, late on. And it was an amazing goal as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, but it's in the last minute. I mean, is that something that's...
No, that's what I mean. It didn't look like an arrangement. It didn't look like
a friendly deal. There was a phenomenal first goal from Thomason in that goal game, which I was revisiting, and some great saves in that game. It was a lot more competitive than I think people remember it as.
Actually, speaking of 2008 and speaking of Bilic, nice as well to see him speaking in such unequivocal terms on the subject of racist fans after a Croatia fan themselves in trouble with UEFA. For some chanting and talk of a banana being thrown as well in the game against Italy. And a lot of people were casting doubts about Bilic's own politics back in 2008, kind of music he likes, making easy assumptions and that. And he was leaving nobody in any doubt today. Very disappointed to hear that some of our supporters have behaved like this. I don't like these people. I don't want these people supporting us. We don't want them in the stadium. We are angry with these stupid fans as well. Well, good for him. There you go. That is Group C. Can we get a prediction?
I think Spain and Italy will go through. I think Spain will win and Italy will probably have too much for Ireland.
Really? Paolo?
I think Spain will go through.
Yeah.
And I think I'm going to opt out of part two on the grounds of Scaramanzia.
Okay. Are you scratching away then? Yeah. Okay, Ian?
I'm with Jacob. Italy and Spain to go through.
Really? I think Spain and Croatia go through. I think it's going to be 2-2. And I think Italy will really struggle. They'll probably get a goal late on, and then maybe a second once the pressure's off. But I think it's going to be irrelevant, because I think, quite by chance, Spain and Croatia are going to get a multi-goal draw. But anyway, we'll see on Monday, and hopefully, listener, we'll see you as well when we return with a roundup of all of the Group C deciding matches, and a look forward, of course, to the final group games of 2012 as Group D comes to its conclusion. In the meantime, it's many thanks to producer Ben, to Jacob Steinberg, Paolo Bandini, and jaunty Ian McCourt, and we'll see you in 24 hours.
Euro 2012 Football Daily. Woof.